Hey, well, it's great to return with you again this evening on such a interesting topic, this question of loneliness. Well, I think see it on the screen, but alone in the crowd, finding the path out of isolation. Alone in the crowd, finding the path out of isolation. Well, I was 8 years old. It was my father's turn to lock up a church, not too dissimilar to this one. The service that we attended that morning. And knowing this, I thought I'd play a big game of hide and seek with my father. However, there were two problems with this plan. I hadn't told my father I was going to do this, and my father believed I'd gone home with my mother. Now, at first, the realization of having the run of the place to myself was exhilarating. Running down the balcony, shouting to hear my own echo in this cavernous space, convinced Dad would come back any minute. Well, that minute turned to 10, that 10 to 30, and that 30 to an hour. All of a sudden, that freedom wasn't fun anymore. I was locked in. My playground had become my prison. You know, I was shouting, "Is there anybody out there? Is there anybody home?" I was trapped, and I was alone. Well, over 20 years, and it would seem, 20 years from my experience, which I promise you hasn't scarred me for life, is a fitting metaphor of how many feel in today's society, that we are an increasingly lonely and isolated people, seemingly trapped in a dark spiral of despair. You know, when one looks at the research and statistics, it paints a very depressing picture. Studies show that Britain is the lonely capital of Europe, that the latest data we have shows that the situation isn't getting any better. With each generation that follows, we are getting progressively more isolated, more lonely, with the younger generation struggling with this social darkness acutely. You know, they're experiencing those famous words of the great songwriter Paul Simon, "Hello darkness, my old friend, I've come to talk with you again." This isn't a small, inconsequential issue either. Research into loneliness shows that it can be as harmful as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Loneliness and isolation isn't just making us feel bad, it's literally killing us. And the issue is global. The US Surgeon General calls loneliness the next epidemic society must face. The UK government has a minister for loneliness, Baroness Barron, to spearhead a policy response. And this data was all there before a global pandemic sent us into enforced isolation. The frightening truth is that we already had a pandemic of loneliness long before COVID-19 came onto the scene. It has merely exacerbated the deep social isolation that was already spreading throughout our societies. So the question we must ask is, how did this happen? How has the most developed, advanced, and populous civilizations on Earth reached a point where many of their inhabitants feel that they are all alone? And perhaps more pertinently, how do we find a way out of this dark forest? How do we find the path out of isolation? Well, what I'd like to do over the next few minutes is potentially posit a few potential causes of this loneliness and perhaps posit a Christian response to those causes. And as I'm speaking, if there are any questions, please do throw them in. It'd be good to have some back and forth after I have spoken. So let's look at those causes. Some think that the rapid increase in loneliness correlates with the rise of technology. So that we have advanced into areas which deliberately encourage our isolation. And this is seen most powerfully in the invention of the smartphone. The author, Tony Reinke, observes the smartphone is causing a social reversal. The desire to be alone in public and never alone in seclusion. The desire to be alone in public and never alone in seclusion. Very insightful. We cut ourselves off from the ability to connect when we are surrounded by possibilities of connection and then crave them once we find ourselves alone again. It has allowed us to transport ourselves out of our time and space and enter another place. We can be having a coffee in IKEA whilst also looking at places to go on holiday in countries on the green list and watching the Olympics in Tokyo, all the while missing the opportunities for connection in our immediate surroundings. You know, the title of our evening begins with Alone in the Crowd, and that is exactly what a smartphone enables us to do. You know, no wonder Catherine Price, the author of How to Break Up with Your Phone, a book I really recommend, by the way, calls the smartphone the boyfriend you know is bad for you. You know, all your friends telling you to break up with him, but you just can't bring yourself to do it. Of course, this is just one area of tech, but I could point to many, many more. You know, we watch YouTube and Netflix instead of going to the cinema. We get our dog food from Amazon instead of going to the pet shop. We order on Deliveroo instead of going down to Wagamama's. It's clear for all the benefits that technology has been to us as a society, including, of course, enabling us to continue some semblance of life during a pandemic, but it has accelerated societal isolation, decreasing opportunities where community can flourish. That said, there is a counter movement within the tech industry who are trying to retard the dominating effect technology has in our lives, returning to a more balanced relationship. The light phone is a device created with limitations built into it. It doesn't have a camera, a web browser, or email. It hardly has a screen. It's like a kind of a slimline 21st century Nokia 3310. It's all yours for $300 if you're interested. But if that's too extreme, there are time-limiting reminders one can set on our devices. I receive a screen report every week detailing how much of my life I've wasted on my phone. You know, can technology save itself from its role in causing this relational decline of its users? And is technology actually the predominant cause of our isolation in society? Or is there more we need to explore here? You know, well, technology's extroverted cousin is, of course, social media. Facebook's mission statement is give people the power to build community and bring the world closer together. A statement, I'm sure, full of good intentions, only for a very different reality to emerge. So much for having thousands of friends online, yet few of them actually knowing who you are. It encourages a projected image which makes us hide our real selves to others. Social media, you know, it's great for pointing us to common community interests, but it's really poor at the qualities needed for relationships to really thrive. You know, the spontaneity and chemistry of real conversation, the reactions of body language, the proper interpretation of speech. How many friendships have been strained online for the misinterpretation of sarcasm? The titanic rise of social media has increased connectedness, but not deep, rich community we all seek. Indeed, on so many big questions of life, societal, political, philosophical, it has entrenched us into warring tribes rather than bringing us together. So could this, social media, this explain our isolated state? Is this the cause of our plight? Or is there more? There is a Japanese non-profit charity called New Start. It is dedicated to helping a certain type of person, a people who are called the hikikomori. There are over 500,000 of them in Japan. And the hikikomori are recluses who have retreated from offline life and live entirely online. Hikikomori literally means pulling inward, being confined. They don't leave their homes or even their rooms for months or even years on end. And this charity helps them on a journey from their bedrooms into society once again. And the charity, they share stories of some of the people they help, like an 18-year-old who had dropped out of school and now would play a computer game for 15 hours a day, every day. And he'd been doing this for over 2 years. And what was sobering to see was that each hikikomori had a different reason for having withdrawn from society. But they all had one thing in common. A significant driver was the perception of shame and stigma. You know, most had suffered some kind of traumatic event, bullying, a failure to graduate, a relationship breakdown, the loss of a job, a public humiliation. They felt the stigma and of failure, of a society telling them that they were a failure. And they'd completely withdrawn. They'd had enough. They were ashamed and had slipped into the shadows of society, hidden, closed, forgotten. Now, the hikikomori is a particular social issue in Japan, but I'm sure there are hallmarks of it that we can see in our own communities or even in ourselves. The feeling of not being good enough, a failure, or perhaps experiencing a relationship breakdown and causing people to withdraw, a deep trauma which has caused this isolation. And friends, can I just say, you know, if that resonates with you tonight, whether here in the room or online, can I just say thank you so much for coming. It can't have been easy to attend an event on a topic which is so close to home. But can I say, I'm glad you've come. So thank you so much. You know, we have looked at environmental factors that might contribute to isolation, but it's important to highlight the significant impact that trauma can impact on one's ability to engage with the world. So we have tech, we have social media, we have trauma, and of course, we must address the elephant in the room, the reason many of you are watching the event online, COVID-19. This never-ending life of impending Zoom. I'm sure we're all sick to the teeth talking about it, so I shan't dwell on it very long. We have all experienced the crushing effect of being separated from those we love and cherish. You know, entire nations confined to their houses for months at a time. And as we saw earlier, the loneliness pandemic was here well before lockdowns came onto the scene. But the pandemic has certainly exacerbated the issue. The feeling of listlessness, of languishing, the loneliness, that has affected all of us over the last 15 months. And yes, it really has been over 15 months in this pandemic. And on this topic, I think the pandemic has taught us two really important things. Firstly, we weren't designed for isolation, and we can't last long on our own. We weren't designed for isolation, and we can't last long on our own. It's been made clear through the pandemic just how much we are designed for a relationship, hasn't it? We are naturally social creatures. Even the great introverts among us, we need people. Lockdown after lockdown has shown us just how much we crave the interaction and community of others. You know, the cheesy phrase, you don't know what you've got until it's gone, has certainly been true when we saw the pandemic response rob us from the company of others. It is not right for us to be alone. It's very clear, nor can we survive in prolonged isolation. With each lockdown that has come, it has eroded our ability to live. It has ground us down, depriving us of that relational oxygen we so desperately need. We are relational creatures which struggle to survive if we don't find the path out of isolation. So tech, social media, trauma, COVID. Can these seismic factors alone explain the deep-rooted loneliness our society feels, how I feel, how you feel? Or is there more here to explore? I studied music at university, and primarily the cello. It was a conservatoire just down the road on North Road, the Royal Welsh College of Music. And so it was committed to excellence in the mastery of our instruments. And it was a bit of a baptism of fire for me when I realised just how much I was getting wrong with my playing when I started there. Now, my teacher would point out to the errors in my bowing, my posture, the quality of my sound. And as we worked on it through my first year, we discovered that it stemmed from a greater underlying issue. I had significant tension in my back, shoulders, and mouth. And it was causing all these surface-level problems in my playing. That tension had to be resolved through tailored physiotherapy and medical intervention in order to liberate me to play the cello to the best of my abilities. And the question I kind of want to posit to us today is, what if there is a deeper tension that needed to be addressed in our problem with loneliness? That were we to only address the surface issues, we'd still be stuck with a far deeper, urgent issue, which, if it were not resolved, would continue to cause us pain and suffering. George Monbiot is a Guardian columnist and has written about loneliness in the past. And he wrote this back in 2014 on the subject of loneliness. You can look it up online. Yes, factories have closed. People travel by car instead of buses, use YouTube rather than the cinema, but these shifts alone fail to explain the speed of our social collapse. These structural changes have been accompanied by a life-denying ideology, which enforces and celebrates our social isolation. The war of every man against every man, competition and individualism, in other words, is the religion of our time. For the most social of creatures who cannot prosper without love, there is no such thing as society, only heroic individualism. Do you see what he's saying? He says, yes, we have tech, we have our smartphones, we have Facebook, but these are not sufficient to explain the speed of, as he would say, our social collapse. He thinks there's something deeper afoot, this heroic individualism, this religion of our time, this life-denying ideology. Now, as far as I know, Monbiot is not interested in Christianity. And in fact, in this article, he's talking about the limitations of modern capitalism. But I think he says something really profound for which we can begin to unpick the deeper roots of our isolated condition. And for which I believe that the Christian faith begins to give an answer to. Friends, what if loneliness wasn't a disease, but a symptom? The collateral damage to this heroic individualism that Monbiot describes, this life-denying ideology. What if our loneliness goes beyond just the societal disconnect that we feel today and enters a spiritual dimension? And maybe tells us about something about who we are and what life is about? That might even point us towards asking, is there a God and what is he like? If we feel this deep-rooted sense of loneliness and know in our gut that this is not how it's supposed to be, then maybe we need to reevaluate some of the answers we've given to life's big questions. You know, as the author of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, C.S. Lewis, remarks, if I find in myself desires which nothing in this world can satisfy, the only logical explanation is that I was made for another world. What if that thirst, that hunger for deep, meaningful relationship, which we all seek to escape our loneliness, pointed us to another world? You see, Our society at large has a story about who we are, doesn't it? That we are highly evolved mammals and have by sheer will and determination made a living for ourselves on this rock called Earth. That we are all alone in the world, and we've just got to make the best of it. Now, as the evolutionary biologist Stephen Jay Gould puts it, we are here because one group of fishes had a peculiar fin anatomy that could transform into legs for terrestrial creatures, because the Earth never froze entirely during an ice age, because a small and tenuous species arising in Africa a quarter of a million years ago has managed so far to survive by hook and by crook. We may yearn for a higher answer, but none exists. We may yearn for a higher answer, but none exists. You see, when it comes to this question of, is there something more than this life in our culture's story, the answer is that we're completely alone. We are hurtling through space alone in the dark. Now, I don't know what you think of Gould's analysis, whether you'd agree with it. You know, is that just the grim reality of our existence and we can all go home now thoroughly depressed? Or is there an alternative account of how we've got to where we are today in our lonely state? The central figure of Christianity is Jesus Christ. And we have this eyewitness account of his life by a man called John. Funnily enough, it's called John's Gospel. And at the beginning of his account of Jesus' life, of this eyewitness historical account, he gives this kind of epic prologue, this backstory which makes sense of our story. And he describes Jesus as God and describes him as this light who is the life source of all humanity. He says, "In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world." This is the arrival of God into our world, coming to meet us in the person of Jesus. But there is a twist. We don't want to meet him. John says he came to that which was his own, aka us, but his own did not receive him. John is saying he's come knocking on our doors, but we've refused to let him in. And there is a sort of kind of cold rationale to all of this, isn't there? You know, if there is a God who is the source of all life, this light, this relational God who wants to know us, after all, he's literally come down to see us, but we've locked him out, then surely we're going to experience that deep isolation and loneliness, aren't we? Cosmic, spiritual loneliness cut off from the very thing that will give us life. You know, like a car that tries to run without petrol, or a flower that tries to bloom without the sun, will feel the isolation of being cut off from a relationship with God. Consider those words by George Monbiot one more time. "For the most social of creatures who cannot prosper without love, there is no such thing as society, only heroic individualism." Friends, what if our heroic individualism, our self-made exile, has stopped us from experiencing that love of God, and in so doing, making us painfully lonely, making us feel all alone? We're living in this life-denying ideology, existing in this life-denying ideology. You know, we're not cut out for heroic individualism because we were made to know God. We were made for life. So, as the title of our evening asks, how do we find the path out of isolation? Well, maybe some of the causes I've discussed need addressing. You know, perhaps look to shop local. You know, take a break from your smartphone. If you've got a lot of money, buy the light phone and let me know how it is. Consider your social media diet, how much you're consuming. Take advantage of government easing restrictions on Monday and go and see people. Go outside. Come and see the good people here at Grangetown Baptist Church who would love to meet you and get to know you. You'll find a deep community of people who will really care for you. But what about the big issue? That spiritual loneliness, the account that Christianity gives about our history and our present condition. Well, you remember that charity I was talking about at the beginning? The folk who work with the hiki amori, those who have cut themselves off from society. Well, they have a really interesting way of reaching out to those they're trying to help. They begin by sending letters. They're called love letters. And I read about an Aguri Aoka who wrote to a Mr. Kobayashi Haruto who had been in his room for over 10 years. And she wrote and wrote to him until she finally got an answer. And her aim was to start a friendship that would break through the isolation and loneliness of the Hikiomori, bringing them into community, bringing them into freedom, bringing them into love. And that indeed is exactly what happened to Mrs. Aoka, whose letter to a particular Hikiomori led to a relationship, a friendship, and finally it led to something more. They got together. And then they got married, and now they work together as a couple to help others break out of their loneliness and isolation. So what I say to those who want an answer to the big question of loneliness, that spiritual loneliness, can I suggest reading the accounts of Jesus' life? You know, I read from John's account this evening, but there are others. You know, they are letters to us, to our souls, encouraging us out of our rooms and into a relationship with the relational God, giving us a true path out of our isolation, not alone in the crowd anymore, but seen, understood, and loved. You know, I'll close with an invitation Jesus gives to his listeners. He says this, "Here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person and they with me." The door is knocking, Jesus says. How will you answer? Well, that's my time up. And so I'll hand back over to Ian and he'll tell us what we're doing next.
Thank you, Peter. That's much appreciated. And food for thought. So what we're going to do now, if you're at home, you're going to go and make yourself a cup of tea. If you're in the building, we're going to stop for 5 or 10 minutes. It's a chance to get out and breathe. Over there on the windowsill, there's some paper and some pens. Also some hand sanitizer. So sanitize your hands. Then jot down a question. If you've got a question, maybe something you want to hear a bit more of, maybe something that wasn't said that you've got some thoughts about. And then we're going to come back in that 5 or 10 minutes and have a little panel for another 20 minutes, I guess. If you are at home, or indeed if you're in the building, there's another way to post a question. So hopefully we can put this on the screen. Okay. Now, there is a QR code. If you've got a phone that can cope with a QR code, you can zoom in on that and you will be able to post a question. Somebody's already posted a question. If you haven't got a phone that can do that, you can look up slido.com on your smartphone, public enemy number one, but very useful at the moment. And it'll invite you to put a number in. That's the number, 807-751. So if you're at home, you're able to send in questions with the QR code or go to slido.com and put that number in and it will invite you to enter your question. So we've got 5 or 10 minutes to do that now, whether it's the old-fashioned way, written down on a piece of paper, or whether it's over the internet, and we'll come back at 1:45. Is that okay? Great. Okay. Now let's see. Yes, is the microphone working? Okay, great. Well, welcome back. Hopefully, if you're at home, you've got a nice cup of tea or a refreshing drink. The rest of us haven't. But we have been outside and gasped in some air. So that's been a relief. So we have a panel here of esteemed experts. Peter, who now has got to back up everything he's just been saying. And then we're glad to welcome Alison as well. So, lovely, thank you for being willing to do this. And then there's sort of me who's going to chair it and pass the hard questions to them and then just answer the easy ones myself. Now, we have had quite a few on this list. I think there are six questions. Does that give us the first one there at the top? Okay, let's assume that that's the beginning. Is there one above it? Okay, let's just pick with this first one. So here's one that's come in. Living on my own, a lot of my friends are already bubbled up with their families. What am I to do as I'm not part of others' immediate circle? So obviously here's a very practical question. It's a very good question, a question that a lot of people have got, I think. A couple of questions down, there's another one which says, can you give us some practical things I can do? So there may be similar questions. Perhaps we could take them both together. So focusing on practical things, if someone is isolated, obviously in the context of COVID, what are some of the practical things that we could do or advise our friends to do? Alison, do you want to go first with that?
So I really feel for you. I think it's really tough. I think the last 15 months have been really difficult. I think if you're not bubbled up with somebody else, it has a twofold effect, that it sort of seems to highlight the fact that I haven't got anybody in my bubble, and that compounds the problem, makes your loneliness even more. So what you can do, the worst thing you can do is sit on your smartphone. The worst thing you can do is go onto Facebook and see how everybody else apparently seems to be having a great time. You never see sad faces on Facebook. It's always sort of, you know, we're having a great time. I think you need to get out of the house. And you need to go for a walk. That's really good for all of us, sort of good to do some exercise. Gives you an opportunity to perhaps meet people. Go for a coffee somewhere. Is there somebody that you could possibly ask to meet you for a coffee? Definitely get out of the house. Sit on a park bench and try and reach out to somebody else, perhaps, who appears to be on their own. But staying at home isn't going to help at the moment.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to add to that, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, I think the kind of causes for isolation and loneliness, which I kind of gave at the beginning, I think what those kind of modes do, whether that's technology, social media, I think they give what I'd probably call kind of thin community, thin relationships. They don't have a lot of depth to them. And I think if we kind of keep giving ourselves a diet of that, we're going to get quite malnourished in the relationships that we really need to thrive. And so what I'd encourage you to do is to seek out a deep and rich, meaningful communities for which those relationships can flourish. Now, there's many ways that those places can take place, and some of those can be linked up through social media, but they're not on social media, they're in real person relationships. I think we're going to be having more opportunity to do this when we're able to have a few more freedoms given to us by our dear government. And on Monday, it looks like we can have 30 outdoors in the gardens. And so that question with the kind of bubbles, hopefully that enables you to be able to at least be in the garden with these other people and to have real community with them. But also try and seek out, I think, what's really important, what's certainly helped me in my life, is intergenerational community. So not just relationships with my peers, which are great, and colleagues can have a pint at the pub with mates and just, you know, chew the fat of life, but also learning from people from other generations. And that's very rare at the moment in society, but it's through those intergenerational relationships I think we really grow and we really thrive. And I can say this because I'm not a part of Grangetown, but you'll find a lot of that at Grangetown Baptist Church. And so if you are local and you just want a great community who will look after you, love you, and invest in you, come seek them out. They'd be delighted to have you, I'm sure. But as I say, I can say that because I'm not from here.
Thank you. Yeah, and I didn't pay him. But we can add to that, that we as a church have obviously got a big responsibility. And those of us who are bubbled up and have help and support, we can maybe not appreciate what it's like not to be. And so we have a responsibility. The Lord Jesus crossed the room. You know, the Lord Jesus broke the barriers. The Lord Jesus crossed out of comfort zones to seek and to save. And that's got to be in our DNA also. You know, that's how we have been found. And our lives have been turned around, as Peter was sharing earlier. So I think that's the flip side of it is, you know, we as a church must be available and open. Churches are one of the few places that have been open now. And we've been open apart from a few occasions since August. And so there are people meeting. There are people as hungry to meet with others as anyone else. And yeah, to seek that. So those are a number of practical things, aren't they? Which hopefully begin to talk about and address those questions. Okay, if we could have the question board back up again. Okay, so we've talked about some practical things. We've talked about the second question. Okay, here's perhaps a similar one. Excuse the pause, I'm reading it for the first time too. I'm just wondering whether we should come back to that one at the very end, because it's another practical question. So let's stick that one on the waiting list and finish with it. So don't let me forget it. Let's go down to the next one. Can you say a bit more about loneliness as a symptom? So you mentioned that in your talk, Peter, so I'm going to come to you first. A symptom, and that's an intriguing idea, isn't it? Often, you know, that's what we feel, lonely, so that's what we're focused on. But you introduced the idea and added and explained the idea that there could well be something underneath that. And obviously, you don't want to just medicate symptoms, you want to deal with the disease. So, a symptom then, a symptom of what? That seems to be the question.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I guess what I was trying to focus on in that part was saying we all like to focus about on loneliness, and as I shared, you know, our government has a minister for loneliness, and you know, you can have non-profit charities devoted all the time to kind of trying to help people in loneliness, and that's all well and good, and I don't want to kind of poo-poo any of those initiatives, but I also wanted to change the clear, so what happens if it's actually pointing towards something? So just as a kind of, you know, we've all been aware of the symptoms of COVID, you know, a kind of a tickly cough and all those sort of things, loss of taste and smell, you know, and we identify that as a symptom where we need to then seek help. And what I was kind of drawing on is, what happens if loneliness and there are kind of daily experiences of loneliness maybe in our lives, which might come from some of those other causes which I was talking about, tech, social media, etc. But one's that kind of deep gut feeling of loneliness, of that sense that I'm all alone in the world. Is there anyone who hears me? Does anyone understand me? What if that's a symptom of something greater, of what I call the kind of a spiritual loneliness? And I was then just making the case that if there really is a God in the world, and we don't know him, and if he is, as the Christian faith describes, is a relational God, a loving God who wants to know the people he's created, then if we've separated ourselves from that, then we're going to get sick, because we're going to cut ourselves off from the thing that's going to give us life, that's going to give us hope, which is going to give us meaning in our lives. And from that also, we'll have that sense of community, because we're attaching ourselves to the life source, which gives us that community, that richness in relationships. So that's what I was getting at with the idea of it being a symptom, is that if we just focus on loneliness as a concept, we might actually miss a trick, because it might be actually pointing to something greater.
Okay, thank you. Alison, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think that when God made us, he made us that we would have a relationship with him. And I think if we haven't got that relationship with God and we don't know him, then we definitely will have an emptiness in our lives which only God can fill. It's like like a deep craving within you, and you won't get any satisfaction with perhaps the best things in the world that money can buy. But without God, you will just have that emptiness, yeah, which will give an aloneness, and you won't feel fulfilled.
Okay, thank you. So I'm the minister of the church, so it falls to me to drill down and use the S word. So I'm going to talk about sin. What is it that has separated us from God? You know, has God moved on? Has God forgotten us? No. God hasn't moved. We moved. That's the heart of what the Bible has to say. You know, that we have turned our back on him, and we have rejected him. And so I would add to what we've already said and say that emptiness, because we're separated from God, that loneliness, because we're separated from God, it is the fruit of our own sinfulness, our own rejection of him. And there's, you know, to get God back in our life, there's got to be some kind of reconciliation. There's got to be a putting things right. So it's not that we just don't know him and need an introduction. You know, there is a broken relationship that needs to be fixed. Now, one of these other questions I saw will maybe pick this up and develop it further. So, this one I did see. So, what have we come to? So we talked about loneliness as a symptom. Can we go down to this one? Can you say a bit more about shame and trauma as causes of isolation? You mentioned that again, Peter, in the talk. I can't quite remember what you said, but you say a bit more. What's the way out? You know, that's what we're interested in.
Yeah, so I guess firstly I want to say is I want to tread carefully. I don't know your personal experience, and I don't know kind of what you've experienced. That thing of trauma and shame is just that from the kind of people I've met and the research I've done into this topic of loneliness. One of the factors which causes people to withdraw is that personal traumatic event in one's life, which could cause them to withdraw, that they've been stung through maybe a relationship or stung through something happening within a relationship, and that has made them not want to go out into society again. I know it's a bit distant talking about a very different culture, but you know, the hikikomori in Japan was an example of that, of a people, and perhaps on the extreme end, but had a big life event, a big trauma, and they felt that shame acutely, and so withdrew from society. And so I just wanted to highlight that thing can be real, and that thing needs to be taken account for, and I'm sure, especially as the question is brought to that, maybe that is something you've personally experienced. I think as a starting point is go and talk to someone about it. I think we need to be able to say that we're not okay, that we are suffering, that we have had an event which is really struggling, but hopefully you want to seek help. And from my experience, keeping on withdrawing, keeping on being a recluse from the outside world, even though it might feel like it's a protection, get me to where I'd like to go, which is hopefully to be healed, to have some healing in this traumatic event in my life. So in terms of the way out, the kind of next tentative steps I'd say is go to speak to someone and receive that help. I'd also point you to there's a great story in that eyewitness account of Jesus' life in the Gospel of John, chapter 4. And we see this woman at the well, who through a series of different life choices and relationship breakdowns, finding herself isolated, ostracized, put out from the society, alone at a well. And what you see in this beautiful encounter is Jesus goes and meets with her and speaks healing words into her life and helps her be reintroduced into the society. And so I just encourage you to read that. It's a really beautiful story, and I hope that would that story would be an encouragement to you on your path to recovery.
Thank you. That's really helpful. And Alison, I mean, what would you counsel somebody that is dealing with shame? How would you advise them?
So basically, living with what's happened to you or something you've done that you're ashamed of is a huge burden to carry. But I do think that, and sometimes there's things that you feel you can't share with somebody else. We do need each other, but there are sometimes things you think I can't tell another soul about this. It's absolutely so bad. For me, the fact that God knows all about us, so nothing is ever a surprise to him, I find that a real help. So we can, you might never ever have prayed, but you can pray. And that is just talking to God. It's nothing, you don't have to be in a special place or anything. So I just think you can just call on God and just say to him, look, I'm a mess. You know the mess that I'm in. I need your help. I do think that, for me anyway, the Bible has been a real help. So I think that there are parts of the Bible that particularly will speak into your situation. So if you've got a Bible or you can get a Bible, then read it, know it, and see that, you know, like you were saying earlier on, that, you know, Jesus, he loves you and he cares for you and nothing is shocking to him at all, but he'll reach right deep down into where you are. What I would say is, like has been said, if you bottle it all up, then your situation's going to get worse, your trauma will get worse, your mental health will be affected, and you'll just go down the pan, really. But there is a way out, and it's, well, if you can't speak to somebody else, speak to God. And come to a church, come and sit in the back, nobody need know, just come and hear what God's got to say, and that will be a help.
Thank you, that's really helpful too. The Bible really is all about our shame being dealt with. You know, shame is a problem that every one of us has at some level. And the only human being who ever lived who had no shame is Jesus himself. Nothing to be ashamed of. And yet when you read the story of his life, you find that he dies a most shameful death. And the great punchline of the Bible, of the gospel message, is that he was then taking our shame from our shoulders. And he was bearing it in our place. And to be associated with him is to share his honor as a truly righteous person. So there really is something in the gospel, something in Jesus that is designed to completely deal with our shame forever. And this morning in church we had a hymn that was focused on the cross. And I made a comment as we introduced it and said, well, look, it's important that we really see and feel and understand the suffering of Christ on the cross. We understand the shame that he bore. We understand the guilt that he bore, because that's where our release will come, because he was carrying our shame. He was carrying our guilt. So, I think it's really helpful to understand shame and trauma. And, you know, you can be shamed because of what you've done. You can be shamed because of what someone else has done to you. And you can be shamed just simply because you're associated with something shameful, you know, something in your family. And if that gets a grip in your life, it'll really distort things and just spin off so many different problems. And so you've had some good advice. Thank you for that. It's helpful. Can we go back to the questions? I think we're getting close to the end. Okay, can we go down to that bottom question? And then we'll come back finally to the last one. Okay, so there was a quote that you gave, and if I'm remembering, the question is, you have a quote saying we cannot prosper with, I think it means without love. Yeah, you cannot prosper without love. Was it the Guardian columnist that said it? Well, here's the question, what if I don't have anyone? You know, in some ways that's quite a cruel statement to have had in the newspaper, isn't it? You can't prosper without love. Or what if I don't have any? What if there's nobody who loves me? What am I supposed to do? Do you want to go first, Alison?
Okay. So it's a horrible feeling if you feel that nobody loves you at all. And again, that brings an awful aloneness with it, and an emptiness, an isolation, a feeling of failure. But the truth is, that's just a lie. That's just, it's not true that nobody loves you. Because even if you feel that all the people around you don't love you, then there is one who does love you, and that is the Lord Jesus Christ. And there's a verse in the Bible that says, he is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. So you can't have a better friend or a better person to love you than the Lord Jesus Christ. And he can be your friend. So although you might feel everything's against me and nobody cares, and every day I wake up and that's how I feel, then just go to God and say, can you show me something of your love? And he will do that for you.
Thank you. Peter?
Yeah, I think your question is a tough one to hear, because I think sadly quite a few people have been led to believe that no one loves them and that they're all alone. And that quote I gave from George Monbiot, but I also gave another one by a guy called Stephen Jay Gould, the scientist, who basically says, look, there's no reason or rhyme to the world, and we've just got this pitiless life to kind of try and live, very depressing. And if we kind of like eat that diet of that sort of life-denying ideology, that we come from nothing, that we're going to nothing, that no one loves us really, then we'll just wilt and just wilt away. I think I just want to encourage you, as has already been said, that is a lie, and it's not true. And the great thing that kind of encouraged me to come to faith is seeing there was a God of the universe who knew me as I was and am, and not a very lovely person or someone that's easy to love, but who still was willing to love me and does love me. I didn't read all the passage because we didn't have the time. In that great epic prologue I was talking about, talks about how his own, but they did not receive him. But then it goes on to those who did receive him, they'd become children of God. So as if you put your trust in Jesus Christ, you actually become a part of his family. And you become a loved child, eternally loved, eternally known. And that's amazing. But it's even more amazing when he knows us just completely and just loves us so much. And so that's what I'd say is kind of a really tragic situation. But just to hear that you are loved and that you are known. And that invitation I read at the end of the talk, that Jesus stands at the door and knocks. He's waiting for you to answer it and welcome him in, and that you can have food together.
As you're talking then, my mind went to Romans chapter 5, is it verse 8? It says, but God demonstrates his own love towards us in this, that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And it sets out this love. It's not something just sort of fuzzy and vague. It's something very visible. It's demonstrable. It's happened. It could be seen in Jesus Christ, in his crucifixion, where he died as our substitute and willingly took that shame and that guilt on our behalf, so that we could be reconciled to God and could have this family relationship. The question was about what if I'm not loved, and I do want to add that our culture idolizes romantic love and says that's all that counts. That's a lie. There is such a thing as the love of friends, the love of family, the love of neighbors, the love of believers together in a church. And that love can be just as rich and just as powerful and just as significant as any romantic love. And so we mustn't just collapse and swallow what we're being taught through the popular music, through whatever, the culture. So, and to think more broadly about that, the beauty of a friendship that can be nurtured and built, the beauty of family relationships, which maybe have to be worked out a bit more, the beauty of being part of a fellowship, of a church fellowship. These things are really significant also. They're places you can find love. And the church has really idolized marriage and the nuclear family, and made those who don't have a nuclear family, not married, somehow feel that they're missing out. And that ain't necessarily so. I think that's an important point. Okay, we had one last question, which we moved to last so that we could end on a very practical note. So I'm a Christian. I have plenty of friends, meet up with a few people regularly, yet feel alone. I don't want to be a burden on those I have to be strong for. So that's a... I'll just read it again. I am a Christian, so I get all this that we're talking about. I have plenty of friends, and I meet up with a few people regularly, yet I still feel alone. I don't want to be a burden on those I have to be strong for. Now, would you like to speak into that at all? It's quite a hard one.
I mean, if I could be so bold, I don't know, obviously, much of the context behind the question, but I guess my maybe slight, just gentle challenge to you is, do you know what kind of real community is? Do you know what real relationships are? In that, that to have a real relationship, we have to kind of be willing to be vulnerable with one another, that we have to be willing to show our weaknesses and to rely on other people as well. And so, you know, that quote from George Monbiot about, you know, this heroic individualism, that we see that really prevalent in the culture. And one manifestation of that in culture is that we feel that we have to be this kind of, you know, self-dependent, kind of have it all together, never give myself to anyone, never give too much of myself to someone. We're a real kind of thick, kind of authentic community is to be willing to be weak, vulnerable, and to show our weaknesses and to rely on other people as well. And so my encouragement to you, if you feel alone in the crowd, feeling alone in amongst your friends, then I would encourage you to rely a bit more on your friends a bit more and to open up a bit more to them. Because as you open up, you actually then start to build that thing which is needed for relationship, honesty, and to be our real selves. And that's when real friendships grow, because people see us as we are and still willing to bundle along with us. And so I'd encourage you to kind of try and practice real friendship and real relationship and real community, which isn't just kind of being the strong person, but is willing to kind of show who we really are.
So you're identifying there that last part of it, I have to be strong for those who depend on me, and you're saying that maybe there's the issue, and that actually true relationship involves not being strong and not just always being the person people lean on, but sometimes being the one who needs to lean. I think that's very helpful. Do you want to add anything, Alison?
I think our big problem is that we're not really honest with each other. So we always sort of put a front off on that I'm doing really well, that I'm coping really well. So, you know, you could be meeting up with a group of friends and actually each one of those friends is feeling exactly like you feel. So we sort of... honesty and transparency is important without overexposing yourself, I suppose, because that makes you more vulnerable. But I do think that actually sort of saying, you know, I'm really struggling at the moment, and then, you know, perhaps you can encourage each other, perhaps, I don't know, do a Bible study together, go for a long walk together, pray about the difficulty that you're going through. I think that's a good thing. You could say to this friend, look, can we pray together once a week? That's not being intense. That's a good thing to do. I do think that putting fronts on is a big mistake of our society and amongst Christians, really. We need to be more transparent. So what can you do, really? I think, be honest. The other thing I found is helpful is that I find sometimes I feel sorry for myself a lot, and that doesn't help. So think about, what can I actually do for somebody else? And I find that can be helpful.
Peter?
Just coming in quickly again as well, the one thing I'd also add, really echo those sentiments there, is that there's so much of our society which encourages kind of which is counterintuitive to actually building good relationships and actually having good friendships. And a part of that is, you know, through the technology we have. So if there's any an awkward moment or if there's any a silent moment, we can look to our phones and then we'll just be consumed and be in another place, you know, kind of looking at those kind of Tokyo Olympics. And so what I kind of really encourage is, I think in today's society, with all the different distractions that we have in our lives, technology, social media, all of it, we need to take proactive steps to really foster really rich, decent, authentic friendship and community. So, you know, kind of crazy idea, but, you know, if you're meeting with your friends, why don't you put kind of a, you know, your phones in the box? Or kind of think of, ideas which will make sure that, yes, if there's an awkwardness that happens in the discussion, that we kind of celebrate that and realize that's all a part of the chemistry of what real relationships and friendships are like. So I just think put yourself into situations which are actually going to encourage interaction, because we're living in a society which often encourages us to be distant, to be self-sufficient, to live a projected identity like we do online, and to bring that projected identity into real relationships. And we mustn't allow that. We must try and allow for real relationships. And so we're going to have to take a proactive approach in order to be able to actually get that friendship that we so desperately want and desire.
Okay, well, I'm conscious that there's a group of people looking after children who were hoping we'd have finished at 7 o'clock. So we need to stop. But can I say thank you very much to Pete for today as a whole, for this evening, for your comments here. Thank you to Alison so much for your input. Thank you for those great questions. Now, there's one more slide, I think, which can come up, which is what we're going to do next week. So Peter won't be here, unfortunately, so you might have to put up with me trying to do the talk. But I want to try and run a few of these. And next week, the plan is to talk about acceptance and the search for acceptance, to have a sense of belonging. So we'll have the same format. We'll attempt something similar and see how it goes. So, well, thank you very much. Much appreciated. And thank you too.